Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, May 16th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Minnesota's water quality is eroding, and the new University of Minnesota athletic director has a lot on his plate. Testimony continues today from a star witness in the federal government's case against three men accused of trying to join ISIS. Laura Ewan reports.
20-year-old Abdullahi Yusuf riveted the courtroom Friday with a story of how he became radicalized. He said it started back in March 2014, after he learned his best friend had traveled to Syria and joined ISIS. Yusuf said one of the three men on trial, Guled Omar, recruited him into a group of men who were plotting their own travels. Omar's attorney says the evidence will show his client repeatedly rejected the plans to join ISIS. Abdullahi Yusuf's relative, Kamal Hassan, thinks there's even more to the story. He says Yusuf has yet to say on the stand who else was involved.
There were 10 older people at the mosque that are not named. I suspect some of those have to do with the radicalization and the recruitment of this youth.
But prosecutors have said the young men radicalized one another. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Education Minnesota has given its 2016 Teacher of the Year Award to a North Minneapolis charter school teacher. Matt Sepik reports.
Abdul Wright teaches 8th grade language arts at Best Academy. He's the 52nd recipient of the annual award from the State Teachers Union and the first charter school teacher to receive it. Wright said he hopes his achievement will inspire his students.
I understand what it means to not believe in yourself. I understand what it's like to wake up and like, man, I can't get through this day, or to feel like nobody sees you, or to feel like everything you're doing is for nothing. That was me.
Wright is 29 years old and grew up on the south side of Chicago before moving with his mother and 8 siblings to North Minneapolis as a teenager. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
It's a busy day at the state capitol today. Governor Dayton is expected to make a transportation funding offer to House Republicans. The governor has pushed for a gas tax increase to fix roads and bridges over the coming decade. House Republicans say a gas tax increase isn't needed and that it can be done with existing funds. We'll have more on that tomorrow. Meanwhile, the state house is expected to debate whether police officers need permission to activate body cameras inside private dwellings. The bill to establish rules for body cameras is slated for a vote tonight. The consent issue is among more than a dozen amendments awaiting consideration. The bill's sponsor is Republican Representative Tony Cornish of Vernon Center. He says requiring officers to seek permission before they use the cameras could be dangerous to the officers and to others.
Law enforcement just can't be in an argument at the door whether they have the camera on or not, and acquiesce and turn it off and then go in and have some unarmed teenager jump out of the closet and end up the person being killed, and then there's no video footage, and you and I both know where that's going to go.
DFL Representative John Lesh of St. Paul says public trust will be diminished and lawsuits could result if too much footage is kept private.
Well, otherwise, government starts doing secret stuff that, who knows? And then we start to get lazy. If we're not held accountable, we start to get lazy, and then bad things happen.
A measure passed by the Senate lacks any consent clause. Conference committee negotiations would likely be needed if the House passes its version. Mark Coyle will soon be at the helm of the University of Minnesota's athletics programs. With the new job, he inherits several teams regularly competing at the top of the conference, several teams that aren't, and quite a few looming problems for the department. Peter Cox has more on what Coyle is facing.
There was little fanfare Friday as Mark Coyle was officially hired as the new Gophers athletic director.
Report, which includes the following appointments. Mark Coyle as director of intercollegiate athletics. Scott Lanyon as vice provost.
His name was bundled with several other hires presented to the Board of Regents.
Discussion on the motion. If not, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion prevailed. Regent Hsu.
With that, the Board of Regents officially signed off on a 5-year contract, which will pay Coyle a base salary of $850,000 per year, as well as incentive bonuses. And the hope for the U is that it's turned a new page for its athletics department. Coyle takes the reins of a position last held by Norwood Teague. Teague resigned last August after being accused of sexual harassment. University President Eric Kaler is clear that Coyle is walking into a program that has problems.
Certainly basketball has been in the news a lot. We do have some investigations into our gender equity compliance. I happen to think we're in a good space there, but we'll await the OCR findings. Clearly, we've got a decision to make on our men's hockey coach. We've got some opportunities in our football program that we'll watch carefully as Tracy moves into the season. So it's a full-time job.
The basketball team set a school record for losses last season. It has also seen several players suspended because of off-the-court behavior. And a recent audit found that Coach Richard Pitino spent more than allowed by his contract on travel. As he announced Coyle's hiring, Kaler said he was profoundly disappointed with the basketball program. The new AD was asked about the program during the same press conference.
Mark, how do you view the basketball team and its problems at this point at the University of Minnesota?
Again, not having a chance, you know, to dial into that yet. But again, I look forward to meeting, the staff, the coaches, and learning what's going on and what can I do to help that program grow and again, compete at the highest level.
Coyle has dealt with coaching changes before. Shortly after he was named athletic director at Syracuse University last year, he fired an underperforming football coach. When Coyle took the AD job at Boise State in 2011, the football program was winning under Chris Peterson. But the team was also dealing with several NCAA violations. Dave Southern is a sports reporter for the Idaho Statesman who covers Boise State. He says Coyle worked with a Boise football coach.
Coyle held on to him longer than most people would have expected him to be in Boise. That was another thing that he stressed, was just keeping good coaches and changing that culture a little bit, making sure that they weren't going to be in that situation again.
Former Gopher and North Stars hockey great Lou Nanny says the Coyle hire gives the program a fresh start.
Someone that I think is bright, refreshing, works hard, and very dedicated to winning. So I think they made an excellent hire.
Nanny, who is fundraising for the U's $165 million Athletes Village project, says they've raised $95 million so far. He expects the new athletic director will help ease the minds of donors. It already has for some.
Just the way he's carrying himself is what we need.
Nancy Lindahl says she and her husband John had breakfast with Coyle the morning after he took the job. The Lindahls recently donated $17 million to the university, $12 million of which will go to the Athletes Village project. She was impressed with Coyle's Midwestern roots and his focus on his family. She says that Coyle should be good for fundraising after what was a very difficult few months.
I know that the pipeline is robust and people have just been waiting for a new athletic director to be named. Now that it's finalized, Mark made many, many phone calls to donors yesterday. So he's on the floor running already.
Coyle says he'll start his new job after Memorial Day. Covering education, I'm Peter Cox. Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Minnesota is rich with water. The land of 10,000 lakes actually has almost 12,000 of them and nearly 70,000 miles of rivers and streams. But there's trouble in the water. Regulators say 40% of the lakes and streams are polluted. Today, NPR News launches a series of reports on threats to water quality. We begin with Mark Zadeklik, who takes us to the southeastern part of the state.
Down a steep road that cuts sharply through thick woods, below acre after acre of farm fields, the scene in the Whitewater River Valley is breathtaking. Brown trout are feasting on a spring caddisfly hatch in the south branch of the river.
Wow, they're feeding really heavy down there. See all that, those little splashes?
That's Vaughn Snook. He helps manage southeastern Minnesota's fishery for the Department of Natural Resources.
See those rises? That's pretty cool.
We're 45 minutes northeast of Rochester, just outside the small farm town of Altura. Today, the whitewater is running crystal clear here. But Snook says that's not always the case. When it rains, whatever's on the fields above, manure, chemical, soil, it can easily make its way into these waters.
Water flows downhill.
A mile or so upstream, cows graze along the whitewater. They also defecate on the riverbank.
If we were to come back here when we had a 2-inch rainfall, this water that's in front of us would not be clear. It certainly would be off color, if not even muddy. So it just depends on where the rain fell and what had recently happened up top.
In addition to all of the trout, the picture-perfect whitewater has substantial pollution problems, many linked to agriculture. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has found several common pollutants in the river, among them fecal coliform bacteria and nitrates, which can cause health problems for pregnant women and infants. After heavy rainfall in the middle of last summer, there was a massive, inexplicable fish kill. As many as 10,000 fish in this stretch of the whitewater quickly died. An extensive multi-agency investigation failed to identify a cause. Officials suggested a combination of biological, chemical, and environmental conditions could have been to blame. That did not satisfy some, including geologist and environmental consultant Jeff Broberg, who lives along and fishes the whitewater. He says a major fish kill in a stream pristine enough for trout should alarm people throughout Minnesota.
Because it's clean water, it's a trout stream.
Broberg says regulators are not protecting water from increasing farm threats.
We've gotten to the point now where the industrialization of the agricultural process is just taking over the entire ecology.
Minnesota Pollution Control Agency spokeswoman Kathy Rufschus says there's no disputing the correlation between farming and water pollution.
Water quality is usually exceptionally high in the northeast part of the state and tends to degrade as you go to the south and southwest.
Directly related to the amount of farming that's taking place?
Yes.
Agriculture may be the biggest, but it's not the only culprit. Leaking septic systems, mercury in rain, and urban runoff also contribute. The health department has detected nitrate pollution in more than 8,000 new drinking water wells, and more than 1,000 of them had nitrate levels deemed unsafe for infants and pregnant women. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture is trying to test as many as 70,000 rural wells for nitrates by 2019. Preliminary results found 1 in 10 unsafe. Ag Commissioner Dave Frederickson calls that distressing, but not surprising.
In some of the more intensely cropped acres in Minnesota, we're seeing nitrate levels 2, 3, and 4 times the drinking water standard.
The MPCA is examining all 80 major watersheds in Minnesota one by one to document water quality. Agency pollution control specialist Shana Keasley says regulators used to study only water with known problems.
We know more now than we've ever known about the conditions of our waterways.
And there's a lot of bad news. In urban and farm areas, fewer than half of the lakes are considered fully swimmable because of phosphate and bacteria contamination. In farm country, there tend to be high levels of fertilizer and suspended soils in the water, which choke out aquatic life and cut into recreational opportunities. Fish in nearly all of the Minnesota lakes and rivers studied thus far have the toxin mercury in their tissue. Keasley says Minnesota can't address water pollution without changing farming.
It's not to point a finger at them, but when you have a large majority of the land in ag, then a lot of the solutions are going to have to come from ag.
State officials want farmers to set aside land for buffer zones to help keep soil and chemicals out of waterways. Many farmers are doing much more to reduce pollution, but many feel vilified and are defensive. Among them is Dennis Utke.
Don't point that finger, because you got three pointing back at you.
At a popular lunch spot not far from his home in Dover, Utke says everyone is responsible for water pollution, not just farmers. He points to over-fertilized lawns and runoff from parking lots. As farmers push back, the list of contaminated waters is growing. Back down at the whitewater, Paul Watzka, a hydrologist who consults on water protection, is frustrated.
The whitewater is one of the most studied watersheds in all of Minnesota. To see fish kills in the whitewater in 2015, you know, is just, we're going backwards. There's just no way to get around it.
Watzka is a former state agriculture department and MPCA employee. He was fired almost 10 years ago for allegedly taking documents from the ag department. Watzka thinks his termination was retribution for raising concerns about atrazine, a widely used herbicide turning up in Minnesota waters. Watzka says Minnesota's management of water quality is too fragmented.
MPCA has got the water quality piece, except for pesticides. MDA has the pesticide piece. DNR has the fisheries piece and the water quantity piece. And so when you look at water resources, you got to look at the whole picture.
And Watzke says the same applies to environmental programs. Farmers join or leave depending on crop prices. He says slashing property taxes for farmers who permanently adopt better practices could yield better long-term results. Dennis Utke welcomes that idea. Changing farm practices to reduce pollution cuts into a farmer's bottom line. And Utke says there's only one thing that can make it affordable.
Money. Point blank money.
Ooh, brook trout.
More than 9 months after the fish kill in the Whitewater, a DNR crew led by Von Snook is capturing and counting fish to see whether the population is recovering.
Nice female brown trout.
Let me get rid of some white suckers here.
Snook likes what he's seeing.
There's no bad news here. It's all good news so far.
While researchers couldn't pinpoint the cause of the fish kill, Snook says the die-off raised awareness about threats to water quality.
You can sense the tension.
Snook says more people than ever have been calling his office with water quality concerns.
People questioning, you know, why is that truck there? What's this doing? They don't have blinders on when they drive down a road anymore. They're kind of looking around and curious to know why somebody's parked somewhere and there's a pipe going into the creek.
Heightened awareness could help regulators with one of their greatest challenges, getting people to understand just how fragile Minnesota's abundant water resources are. Covering the environment, I'm Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Altura, Minnesota.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.